Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-1053. National Association of Home Builders et al. Petitioners versus Occupational Safety and Health Administration et al. Mr. Saper for the petitioners, Mr. Gottlieb for the respondents, and Ms. Bohr for the amicus curiae.
May it please the court.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. A logical fallacy lies at the court of OSHA, at the core of OSHA's case here. Just because a court would look to, among other things, the substantive duty in a regulation to infer a unit of violation does not mean that OSHA has rulemaking authority over that issue or to prescribe a unit of violation. One doesn't follow from the other. That's the logical fallacy in OSHA's case. For example, a legislature, which does have authority to do that, can take the same compliance duty and prescribe different units of violation for it. Because one doesn't follow from the other. For training,
I thought all OSHA was doing here was saying that they may exercise its prosecutorial discretion on a per instance, per employee basis, which of course we've approved in Casper and interpreting the word violation in the statute. So all they're doing, as I understood it, was saying in response to the Ho decision, provide notice, there are going to be times where we may exercise our prosecutorial discretion on a per employee basis. The commission still retains authority over the penalties to be imposed. This is just about proposed penalties. What's wrong with that?
I'm very sure that OSHA would tell you the opposite, Your Honor, that they believe that by doing a substantive rulemaking, that under Mead, they have authority over this issue, and as their brief says, to prescribe, to establish, quote unquote, establish the unit of violation. That's in their brief, in the preamble to the final standard.
Sure, they're proposing penalties or issuing citations for per employee on a per employee basis. What's wrong with that? And then it goes to the commission, and the commission may accept that in a particular case or may not, because the commission has final word over the penalties to be imposed.
OSHA, in this substantive rulemaking, is trying to wrest that final word from the commission. In their preamble, they say that by doing a substantive rulemaking, they would get Chevron deference over the unit of violation because they've amended the rules to establish the unit of violation. So now the wording of their rules is sufficient to establish a unit of violation. They would get Chevron deference on that. And even though we believe, as Your Honor has suggested, that the commission should have de novo authority over that issue, OSHA would disagree.
And well, OSHA's brief says, we'll hear from OSHA, but the commission is not bound by the secretary's proposed penalties and may independently assess penalties using the criteria set forth in Section 17 of the OSHA Act.
Yeah, that's talking only about penalty amounts, Your Honor, not how many penalties,
well,
not
but it
how
says
many.
The standard says may.
There is one standard that says may, Your Honor. There they are authorizing per employee units of violation. Elsewhere in the standards, they're actually changing the body, the wording of the standards
to. Right. Let me ask you about that. Let me see if I understand your position, okay? At Joint Appendix 184, it says this. The employer must provide PPE to each employee, okay, required to use a PPE. And then it goes on to say, and each failure to provide PPE to an employee may be a separate violation. So is your objection to the second half of that sentence?
Our objection, actually, Your Honor, is to the statements there, but also elsewhere in the substantive rules.
Is it to the second part of it? And each failure, you know, do you object to them saying the employer must provide PPE to each employee?
No, Your Honor, we object to their prescribing in a substantive rule what they've told the world is a unit of violation.
Well, just help me with this sentence. Which part of this sentence do you object to?
Certainly the second sentence, Your Honor.
And what about not the first part?
And the first part as well,
also?
Because it uses the word each, and
okay,
in prescribing the word each.
So under your theory, the only thing, the OSHA can't go beyond saying employers must provide PPE.
That's
they cannot correct. Say they must provide PPE to each employee. That's your theory?
Not exactly, Your Honor, if I may explain.
Sure.
Our objection is to the fact that they have taken into account unit of violation in prescribing the wording of standards. And by taking into account the unit of violation, they have said that they're establishing the unit of violation. This rulemaking is infected with an unauthorized rulemaking factor. There
but
is not.
Course, but the courts, the Fifth Circuit, interpreted the standard to determine whether it was employee by employee, and all this does is make clear what their legislative intent was, that it can be. It doesn't have to be, but that it can be.
Yes, but they're not entitled to have a legislative intent on this issue because they are not authorized to say a word about it. There is not a word in this statute. Like every other statute, I believe, Your Honor.
The statute uses the word violation, correct?
Of course, yes, Your Honor.
And even before this, didn't OSHA at times seek per employee citations for per employee violations?
Yes, Your Honor. As prosecutors, yes, they have.
Well, okay. So they can do that?
Of course.
And this just says that they may do it for certain kinds of violations. What's wrong with that?
It says much more than that, Your Honor. If they were just going to say that, they
no,
could
it
have
doesn't.
Filed.
It just says it may seek per employee citations, which you've said they've done before and is permissible under the Act, for certain kinds of violations.
Yes, but they are by the first sentence in this rule and by all the other substantive amendments to these standards, and there are 65 of them, they are, excuse me, Your Honor, authorizing the issuance of per employee.
Let me take you, give you a hypothetical. This one standard that Judge Tatel talked about. Suppose an employee employer has 55 employees. And the employer gives respirators to 50 of them, and they're in a situation where they need respirators, but denies respirators to 5 of them because they're union members or whatever, okay? If this provision, this standard were in effect, what possible argument do you have against OSHA charging 5 separate violations in that situation?
We would say, Your Honor, that it is one failure to comply within the meaning of Section 582 because it is one practice. All union members.
Wait a minute, hold on. That's not your argument.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
I thought you were conceding that they could do per employee violations. In fact, that's what we held in Casper.
Well, actually,
I thought your only argument here was that they can't do it in a standard.
Actually,
are you telling me now that you don't think they even have the authority to do per employee violations on a citation basis?
Your Honor, that would be my position as an attorney in an.
What about Casper?
Casper did not deal with per employee penalties, Your Honor. If it did, I wouldn't be here.
Well, it was per instance, right?
Well, it was per failure to record.
Yeah.
The term per instance, it doesn't.
Do you think the word violation in the statute unambiguously precludes per employee citations? Because that's ultimately what I think you have to say, and I don't see how you get there.
I would say, Your Honor, that it permits per failure to comply violations, because the violation is the failure to comply within the meaning of Section 582.
I want to go back to this hypothetical. Excuse
me, Your Honor.
Finish it.
Sorry.
You have 5 individuals who don't get the respirators because of one thing or another. The employer doesn't like them. They're union members. They're malcontents, whatever. You say as an attorney you'd have to argue that that's one
in
violation.
An adjudication.
I mean, how about as a human being exercising common sense?
Your Honor, the question in this case is, does OSHA have rulemaking authority to manipulate the wording of its substantive regulations?
Well, I'm not sure that's the issue, and that's why I'm giving you this hypothetical. I think it's fair to say that there's absolutely, if this regulation, this standard were applied to that situation as applied, there's absolutely no objection possible, and particularly in light of the law of this circuit. Okay, let's assume that's correct. If that is correct, then I don't see how you can prevail, because you have mounted a facial attack against each one of these 60-some standards. And the rule is, under the Supreme Court's decision in Reno versus Flores, that in order to succeed in a facial attack on a regulation is inconsistent with a statute, you have to show that every application of that regulation is invalid. And I don't think you can show that.
Your Honor, if OSHA lacks rulemaking authority to, as they say, establish, quote unquote, establish a unit of violation, then we should prevail.
Now, this rule may be valid as applied in some situations, and even if we accepted your argument that it was invalid as applied in others, because of the Supreme Court's decision in Reno versus Flores, which nobody cites, you lose.
I don't agree, Your Honor.
You don't agree with Reno versus Flores?
No, Your Honor. I don't agree that there is any kind of situation in which these rules can be validly applied, because the rulemaking in which they were adopted was infected with an improper, unauthorized rulemaking factor. OSHA has no business. There's not a word in the statute that authorizes them in a rulemaking to consider the unit of violation and to manipulate the words of a standard.
Can they consider it in an individual citation?
As prosecutors, of course, Your
Honor. They can.
Yes, okay. Yes, as prosecutors.
So then if they can consider it so your position then is that they can consider per unit, per employee violations, but they have to do it on an individual basis
prosecutor. Just like any other prosecutor.
From your client's membership's perspective, individual companies, isn't what OSHA has done here far better in terms of providing notice? Now at least they know that their obligation is to do this per employee, so they have notice. Isn't that far better than having it done individually and randomly throughout the country?
No, Your Honor.
Why?
They're terrified about this because it's the worst of all possible worlds. They could have gotten fair notice if OSHA had just adopted an interpretive regulation, as we stated in our brief and as they had no answer to. They could have given all the fair notice in the world just by adopting interpretive regulations. They, however, decided to adopt substantive ones because they wanted to rest the
issue. What would the interpretive regulation have said?
It would have said, exactly. In our discretion, where a standard says all employees shall be given a respirator, we think we could cite on a per-employee basis in that situation.
Isn't that what they've done here?
Yeah.
No, Your Honor, they've done much more than that.
What have they done that's different?
They have authorized, as a matter of law, per-employee penalties, and they have authorized them, they have established them, and they have announced that because they did it in the substantive rulemaking, they are going to get deference from the Review Commission when it comes before the Review Commission under Chevron, even though, as Your Honor pointed out, Judge Kavanaugh, the Review Commission has de novo authority of it. Well, now they won't, because OSHA has, in an unauthorized fashion, adopted a regulation on the basis of an unauthorized rulemaking factor. I see, Your Honors, I'm out of time.
Yeah,
if I have any
time
for rebuttal,
thanks.
I'd like to use that. Thank you, Your Honors. Okay.
May it please the Court, Ron Gottlieb for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Congress delegated to the Secretary both legislative and enforcement authority. And it did so, as the Supreme Court has noted, so that one single administrative actor would be responsible for both formulating the rules and for seeing that they were both effective and workable in a day-to-day application. In addition, Congress declared unambiguously that each violation of any requirement, of any standard, violates the employer's duty to comply with the standards and exposes the employer to a separate penalty. Accordingly, the Secretary can't help but establish a unit of violation or unit of prosecution in the standard when she decides how specific or how to impose, what requirements to impose in the standard.
Well, the courts, am I remembering this correctly? One of the cases, was it Arcadia or maybe Ho, I don't know, went and interpreted the standard and made it critical whether the secretary in the standard had used the plural employees versus employee to determine whether it's per employee or whether it's a group violation, right? Which case?
Yes, the whole decisions did place, in our view, too much significance on what we thought were inconsequential differences in language in the standards.
So now you've clarified the language.
We think we were entitled to do that. If the whole decisions were incorrect, we clearly could correct an adjudicator's misinterpretation of the Secretary's stance. But even if the whole decisions are correct, the important fact is that they acknowledge that the language of the standards is an important factor.
The standard now says may. You may do that. What are the principles that guide the Secretary in determining under these new standards whether to charge multiple violations or single violations?
Well, the Secretary has what is sometimes called the egregious policy or the instance-by-instance policy, in which she cites employers on a per-instance, or in this case a per-employee basis, when the employer exhibits bad faith in its obligations to comply with the standard.
Will the Commission under this new standard have the authority to disagree that this is an egregious violation and subject to multiple charges as opposed to one?
Absolutely. And page 177 of the Joint Appendix, we noted that petitioner's argument just as went to the effect of the language that the Secretary had chosen, and that the Commission would review these issues when the issues arose in an enforcement
procedure. What column is that?
I believe it's the first column.
Third?
First.
Middle, top, bottom?
Towards the top.
Well, that's finding it. What exactly do you have in mind?
At most, it's about the fifth line down. At most, the chamber's criticisms go to the legal effect of amendments in some specific circumstances. Whether the Secretary's interpretation will be accepted by the Commission or a court in these circumstances, if and when they arise, is a matter to be resolved in an enforcement proceeding.
My understanding is that the practical effect of this is that the Secretary may exercise its discretion to seek per-employee citations, which will have the effect of increasing the maximum penalties that could be imposed for a particular act or violation.
That's correct.
But the Commission retains the power under Sections 10 and 17 to ratchet back the penalties as the Commission sees fit.
This doesn't affect their penalty assessment authority at all. If we cite them in an instance that the Commission believes is not multiple violations, or even if it is multiple violations, doesn't deserve the level of penalties that we think it deserves, it could assess, they determine that it's serious, not willful, they could assess nominal penalties for each violation and arrive at the same penalty that they would assess if we cited them as one violation.
Or could they also do?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dave.
Could they also decide that, to not support multiple violations?
We haven't conceived of any circumstances where they could say that any failure to comply with.
Well, could they say, for example, that the evidence doesn't support?
We obviously have to establish our allegations with evidence.
Right.
If we don't establish that each individual employee lacked the knowledge or was the personal equipment that the standards require, we won't establish the violation.
Right.
One of the odd things about it is we're arguing about what the Commission could do or will do or what its interpretation will be, and the Commission is not a party to this case.
Well, the other
Why don't we remit the case to the Commission to have them pronounce whether they think they're being deprived of authority and what authority they think they have?
Well, it's clear that they agree with the Secretary. In the whole decision, they said the Secretary has a responsibility to draft the standards that provide employees with notice of the unit of violation that the Secretary establishes in her standards. The Secretary can't avoid establishing the unit of violation even if she wanted to, because each violation of any requirement is a violation of the Act.
Judge Randolph's point suggests why this is even ripe. We don't know how the Commission's going to respond to a particular citation.
I think that's correct. But I think the important point is the secretary can consider really any factor that's relevant to her, to the goals of ensuring effective enforcement.
No, in federal courts, if prosecutors charge multiple violations for what really seems to be one offense, but they break it down in days or weeks or whatever, there's always the opportunity for the sentencing judge to take that into account, and we call it the concurrent sentence doctrine. Yeah. You can just, if it's a one-year penalty or whatever, you know, all the sentences will run concurrently, and which doesn't give the prosecutor much incentive, although prosecutors, with some frequency charge multiple offenses in huge indictments, which gets me to my question: does the commission have the authority to suppose you charge for failure to train 1,000 people, you charge 1,000 offenses, right? Does the commission have the authority can the commission suspend the fine?
If it determines that it's an other than serious violation, it could impose no fine at all. If it determines that it's a serious violation, it must assess some penalty, because the Act requires some penalty be assessed for every serious violation. But it can assess a nominal penalty. It could say a penny for each 1,000 employees is the appropriate penalty.
Can
it say there are 1,000 violations charged, but we actually think this is one violation?
We don't think of any circumstances that they could say that, because the employer must abate each violation, must ensure that each employee is trained and is provided with equipment that's required.
No?
I think it's no. But the fact that there might be some circumstances that they could doesn't invalidate the standard. I mean, some standards aren't applicable because there's a greater hazard or it's infeasible. That doesn't invalidate the standard. The standard is clearly valid under almost any conceivable application. And the unit of prosecution must restrain both the prosecutor and the adjudicator. And that's why it's got to be set in advance before the employer engages in conduct that's subject to liability.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Sapper, I think you're out of time.
An amicus.
Sorry. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Victoria Bohr, counsel for the AMICI, AFL-CIO, and Building and Construction Trades Department. The position that the petitioners are taking in this case flies in the face of all of the commission and judicial decisions that look at OSHA standards. And that is, if you look at the cases where the commission and the courts have grappled with what the proper unit of violation is under an OSHA standard, what they look to is the language of OSHA's standards. And by doing so, they are looking at what the secretary intended in crafting that standard. If you look at the case, for example, the Hogue decision, the decision that gave rise to this rulemaking to begin with, what the commission was looking at, or purported to be looking at, was whether the language that the secretary had used specified a course of conduct that applied to employees generally, and therefore the violation of which would only support a single citation regardless of the number of employees affected, or whether it created duties that ran to each individual employee, in which case it would support separate citations for each employee left unprotected. The question that they were asking was what did the language support? And in effect, what did the standard create in terms of the duty of the unit of violation? What the secretary has done here is to take heed of the lessons in those cases and make clear the intent that she said that she had all along by amending these standards.
You said that the position of the National Association flies in the face of all the cases. One of the cases, the Arcadia case, was that Fifth Circuit?
The Arcadian case was the Fifth Circuit, Your Honor.
It says the following: the secretary cannot, in italics, set a unit of prosecution, because in most cases a unit of prosecution has nothing to do with employment or workplace practices or conditions. How does their position fly in the face of that language?
Well,
matter of fact, their position is exactly what the court says in Arcadia, right?
That is what the court said in Arcadian, but if you read on and if you look at their decision in the Ho case, also the Fifth Circuit, in Arcadian they were dealing with the General Duty Clause, which is a statutory provision.
Fly in the face of
it. Well, it flies in the face of what the courts did, Your Honor, because if you look at the Ho case, which is the same court, what the court looked at in that case was what was the language of the standard. And they did not look at, they did not draw from some judicial notion.
I don't understand the Ho case. I frankly don't. They begin, the court begins by saying that the language supports the Secretary's position. It's ambiguous, and we defer, and the language supports us. And then they wind up saying the Secretary's position is arbitrary and capricious. I don't get it.
Well, Your Honor, I don't get it either, but I think the only way to fairly read the Ho case is to say that what the court said there was that they didn't believe that it was a reasonable application of the standard in that case, although that's not the language that they used.
Right.
But I think if you look at what they did there, they looked at the statute, the language of the statute, and they didn't, and they looked at what they felt the statute would support. The other point is that and this is a point that Mr. Gottlieb made, and that is that the Supreme Court said in CF&I that Congress, the Senate, made a considered decision in giving the Secretary both the rulemaking legislative authority and enforcement authority, that it would make a sounder program to put give both of these roles to a single actor, to make sure that the same entity both made the rules and assured that they were effective.
In your view, sorry to interrupt, in your view, if the OSHA charges 10 violations, can the commission say, we actually think this is better considered as one violation?
No, Your Honor. If the Secretary charges and proves 10 separate violations, it's our view that the Commission is bound by that charging decision if the standard supports it. As the Fifth Circuit said.
Can the Commission then say we're going to impose only nominal penalties in this case?
The Commission's authority under the statute is to determine the amount of the penalty for each violation charged and proven, applying the penalty factors and applying the range of penalties that are statutorily.
Statutory language says the Commission can affirm, modify, or vacate the Secretary's citation or proposed penalty.
Correct.
So it does refer to the citation as well.
But if the Secretary.
Because it can vacate the citation.
Well, it's our view that under the Secretary's prosecutorial discretion, she gets to determine the number of violations to charge and prove. And as the Fifth Circuit said in Chau versus the Review Commission, the charging decisions rate, the charge and proof lies with the
Commission determines whether that's been proved, and then the Commission has the authority to set the penalty.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Sapper, you can take 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I gather from what Ms. Bohr said, now I think I understand why you're here, right? You're here because of her answer to that question.
I think you're absolutely right,
right?
Your Honor.
Which
That's
is
correct. That the Commission is not free, Your Honor, to disagree with OSHA as to how many violations occurred.
That's why you're here.
That's why we're here,
okay.
Exactly. And if Your Honors will take a look at Joint Appendix, page 176, column.
And what's wrong with it? Well, I mean, now I know why you're here. Now explain why what the Secretary did was unlawful.
Aside from the frightening prospect, Your Honor, that rule.
Well, we don't have a frightening standard we apply here. The question is
because,
whether
Honor,
or not the Secretary had the authority under the statute to do it.
Because, well.
There's many things that statutes authorize that are frightening.
The statute doesn't authorize OSHA to do anything with regard to units of violation. That is entirely.
But it authorizes the Secretary to issue standards.
The Secretary can issue standards setting compliance duties, mm-hmm. telling employers what to do, train. Equip employees with PPE.
Though it has statutory authority to issue citations for violations.
As a prosecutor.
And the term violation is ambiguous sometimes as to whether there's one violation or five in a particular setting where five different employees didn't get the equipment.
But we do not defer to prosecutors in that decision, Your Honor. That's left up to courts such as this court and the Review Commission. This court would presumably pay no attention to the DOT if it were to instruct this court, well, there were five violations because our regulation says so. That's what OSHA is trying to do here.
We presumably would be, if we were reviewing a commission decision, we presumably would be bound also. Right?
If you were reviewing a review commission decision on that issue, but here OSHA would be saying, and I would urge Your Honors to take a look at Joint Appendix 176, Column 2, first full paragraph. There it says essentially that because we're engaging in a substantive rulemaking, we are taking this issue away from the review commission. If Your Honors play back the tape of this oral argument, you will not hear an answer from Mr. Gottlieb directly saying that with regard to the number of violations, the Review Commission is free to disagree with OSHA, only as to the amount of the penalty. And that's the frightening prospect that causes us to be here.
Eventually on that.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
You're right. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, what's the problem, I guess, is Judge
Because Taylor. The statute does not give OSHA any rulemaking authority to bind the commission on that, gives authority only to the review commissions. I thank you, Your Honor.
You're out of time. The case is submitted. Thank you.